I'd really like to start with an issue that is very much in the news at the moment, and that I know you've been following, given your portfolio in the terrorism and non-proliferation business, namely Pakistan. We're hearing about the prosecution of a man who allegedly gave some assistance to the CIA in finding and confirming that Osama bin Laden was indeed holed up in a seemingly protected location in Pakistan. What does this tell us about the Pakistani government and where we're likely to go from here as we draw down forces in Afghanistan particularly?
Well, I'll share with you, Frank, I've been in Pakistan three times in the last 3 years, and every time that we go into that country, the situation is worse on the ground. The cooperation is lessening. The influence of the Islamist militants continue to expand. Of course, that's why we've had 180 Predator drone strikes carried out and over 1,000 militants killed there. We do not have the support of the ISI, of the intelligence community in Pakistan, on going after some of the high-level terrorists that we're looking for, especially those that are operating against our troops in Afghanistan, as well as, of course, against India. And so, as an alternative, we're using these drone attacks in order to eliminate or try to contain this threat. But it shows you the nature of this problem, and it's not going to get better as long as those Deobindi schools, some of the most radical of
the madrasas
that bring up the next generation of young jihadists, until those are shut down, they've got a ready recruiting network, don't they?
It's a whole pipeline. Just on this question of the doctor, and without getting into any question of whether he actually provided the help that he's alleged of providing,
what does it say,
not just to us, but to the people of Pakistan, that someone is being prosecuted for helping the United States, if indeed that's what he did?
Right, and I think the message it sends is as clear as the message of taking our downed helicopter that was utilized in the attack and shipping that off in a crate to China so that they can study our technology that we utilized in
stealthy technology. Yeah,
exactly. Every message, as you're pointing out, what is the messaging coming out of this? What is the messaging to the people of Pakistan? And frankly, what's our takeaway from this? Well, I think what you can see is, as I indicated, we are not getting cooperation, far from it. And as a consequence, the intelligence services in that country clearly are a big part of the problem in terms of the instability that's being created, and the preparation and transferring the wherewithal to terrorists like those that carried out the attack on Mumbai. You know, you can see the very real cost to the West and to Pakistan's neighbors in their willingness to not cooperate. And this is one more example of it.
It's unfortunately, as you say, getting worse. The implications of that for one of the other areas of your responsibilities, Congressman Ed Royce, on the House Foreign Affairs Committee's Subcommittee on Terrorism, Nonproliferation, and Trade, is the proliferation piece of this. We talk often, amongst ourselves at least, about the dangers of nuclear weapons in the Pakistanis' arsenal, some estimate as many as perhaps 100 of them now, migrating into the hands of people that the ISI at the very least works with, if not is populated by, namely, Islamists, Sharia-adherent folks who would love to bring such weapons to bear against, Israel, perhaps against us, who knows. How do you see that particular problem against the backdrop of what you've just said of the worsening of the situation in Pakistan?
Well, I think it's best summed up by a quote some years ago that you and I noticed at the time, but I believe it was the foreign minister of Pakistan who, when they developed that capability, that atomic capability, with that test, announced not that Pakistan had the bomb, but said Islam has the bomb. And that, again, in terms of a message, that doesn't speak to the ambitions of a nation trying to defend, its sovereignty. It's not a perception that, well, Pakistan now has the bomb. It's this, why make that statement? why telegraph that message? And of course, this is our concern, is the number of warheads in inventory, the question about whether or not they can properly monitor those at this point in time, and of course, the deeper question, if the instability continues to grow in the country, if the graduates of these Diobindi schools continue to expand the upheaval that's going on internally, and many of the areas where I could originally go in the country 3 years ago, I certainly can't go today because they're frankly under the dominion now of radical militants. And so this is the question for our policymakers in the future, and this is why we're trying to send the message to the Pakistan government that you yourselves are eventually going to be consumed by what's been unleashed partly by the intelligence services, in our opinion.
Right, and I guess partly by going back to former President Zia in his day. Let me turn to another topic before we run out of time with you, Congressman Ed Royce. You mentioned drone strikes. You mentioned how many of them have been used with lethal effect, salutary lethal effect at that, in Pakistan. We've, of course, also very recently had one take down Anwar al-Awlaki, one of the most dangerous men, arguably, operating in the Al-Qaeda network outside of that region. Yeah. Let's just talk about the argument we're now hearing from some that this was an extrajudicial assassination of an American citizen. Where do you come down on that? And what would you say about the need to use such technologies there and elsewhere, perhaps in the future?
Well, I think the court has spoken in the past very concisely on this subject. They made the argument, unlike the ACLU that's driving this case, that filed the formal lawsuit on behalf of Awlaki's father, that sought to halt what it claimed was an illegal U.S. government assassination. But the court said 60 years ago, in the Nazi saboteur case, they said citizenship in the United States of an enemy belligerent does not relieve him from the consequences of belligerency. So last December, we had the court dismiss the lawsuit brought forward on this case, on the Al-Laki case, under the political question doctrine, which requires judges to step aside on issues that should be resolved, by
the political bodies,
the elected branches and political branches, right, of government. So, I think it's very straightforward. I mean, you have an individual here who has repeatedly tried to kill us. The Fort Hood shootings were his handiwork. The would-be Times Square car bomber was inspired by him. He was behind the Christmas Day underwear bomber and also a number of attacks in Britain and in Canada. The Canadians who wanted to attack Parliament and behead their prime minister were inspired by
his
him.
Influence. Yeah.
The politician in Britain who was stabbed again. The woman was radicalized listening to him. So, I think we have a pretty clear case. I imagine if you tallied it all up, you'd have since 9/11. I think he was responsible for more terror attacks, inspiring more of them that killed Americans probably than anyone else.
Yeah, a man at war with us.
He's an American himself.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
American himself.
Traitor and now deceased. Thanks be to God. Ed Royce, we thank God for your service to our country and for your joining us from time to time. I hope you'll do so again soon. Keep up the good work, sir, and we'll look forward to talking with you in the near future.